Good evening, everybody.
Hello.
In the Zendo and virtual. And welcome Colleen as our guest tonight. So, you know, I'm going to do part two of the verses on faith mind tonight. And there are so many things in the Zendo that remind me of it, even in the Gatha we just did. It's always encountered, yet rarely perceived. And in the relative and absolute, while we do the faith in mind, you're going to hear, we're going to be chanting a lot the relative and absolute, because it dovetails into this poem. Now, faith in mind, you know, there are different translations. One is faith in mind, which I had on the original document. But the version that we're using, the translation that we're using, is verses on the faith mind. Verses on the faith mind. So here's part two. The way is perfect, like vast space, where nothing is lacking and nothing is in excess. Indeed, it is due to our choosing to accept or reject that we do not see the true nature of things, always encountered yet rarely perceived. Live neither in the entanglements of outer things, nor in the inner feeling of emptiness. Be serene in the oneness of things, and such erroneous views will disappear by themselves. When you try to stop activity to achieve passivity, your very effort fills you with activity. As long as you remain in one extreme or the other, you will never know oneness. So this particular stanza, if we can call it that, speaks to me of the dominance of the everyday discriminating mind, the dualistic mind, filled with judgments and opinions and perceptions, filled with activity. Therefore, it's a clouded mind, our minds. It doesn't see the whole picture. It doesn't see the true nature of things. Got so much going on up there. In Buddhism, we think of the mind as vast space. Often it's portrayed as deep, vast ocean, where everything is included, including this everyday discriminating mind. The everyday discriminating mind of good and bad, pass and fail, is at the shallow end of Buddha nature. It is Buddha nature, but it's at the shallow end of Buddha nature, the waves kissing the shoreline. That's where we exist most of the time. The only way we can realize empty mind is to go deeper into the ocean. And this is our goal in Buddhism. We want to move away from kissing the shoreline, from right and wrong, yes and no, pass and fail. We want to go beyond that. So a long time ago, I'm quoting myself now, I came up with this idea, it's really not a new idea, but it's Buddhism is not about surfing the waves, you know. It's about making deep dives into the self, the one self, capital S. It's the only way we can be serene in the oneness of things. Otherwise, we live a one-sided, shallow life, you know. Everyday mind is caught up in busyness and doesn't see or acknowledge empty mind. And this is why we meditate, to know and experience empty mind, which is the infinite aspect of ourself. You know, when I come up to the altar and I'm given the incense, what do I do with the incense? But before I set it into the incense bowl, I pick it up and I bring it up here. And it's such a beautiful metaphor. because mind is not contained within this skull. Mind is goes up and out. It's infinite, like the incense smoke. It just is everywhere. So when we meditate, we want to know this part of our mind, the infinite part of our mind. Seng San, who is supposedly the author of this poem, is telling us how to do this. He says, let go of duality, picking and choosing one mind or the other. Accept both minds. Live from both minds. I mean, we need our discriminating mind to live in our dualistic world. We have a dualistic mind that fits our dualistic world. We have a deluded mind that fits our deluded world. But we also, beyond that, have this extensive, huge, infinite mind that carries everything, including this little itty-bitty mind. We live from both, but most of the time we don't. We forget about Buddha nature. We forget about the bigger part of ourselves, especially when we're interacting with people. And it's a little scary for us because our everyday mind doesn't think that the empty mind can do anything. We don't have a lot of faith in the empty mind. We're like, empty mind. It's empty, you know? It's not a quality that our culture or society, the modern world, appreciates, right? It doesn't achieve anything. It's just there, right? It just is, as we say. So we think, in our mind of achievement, that we have to do it all, that we have to strive, you know, to do our best. And so we have very busy meditations, you know, trying to stop the thoughts, judging the thoughts, getting angry at ourselves because we can't achieve stillness. So we're making our meditation practice a project, like we would at work or like we did in school. Well, we have a project. We have a way that we're going to attack this project, and we're going to do it like this. That ain't Buddhism. That is not Buddhism. And we've talked about this before when we talked about busyness. And we were like, well, if you want a quiet mind, you have to have some aspects of your life that are quiet. You can't just come to meditation, to the meditation hall, and think that all of a sudden your mind is going to be quiet because you're in the meditation hall. So Sang San warns us, when you try to stop activity to achieve passivity or stillness, your very effort fills you with activity. Look at what we added to that, to a simple meditation, right? We have judgments and opinions and condemnation. So we get further and further away from empty mind when we do things like this. You know, even in looking at this poem and working with this poem, you can make it all about, you know, success or failure. You can make it all about that. Oh, I didn't do this today. Oh, I didn't. Oh, I forgot to bring empty mind with me. You know, you can make it that, but that's not. You're sticking in the discriminating mind. This is the achieving mind, which comes from the mind of lack. You know, we lack this, so we want that. In these moments, we don't realize that we are the way, perfect, like vast space, where nothing is lacking and nothing is in excess. You're all perfect, just as you are. You are already the ocean. You are the whole ocean, even though you're a wave, you're the whole ocean. We cannot practice on or off the cushion with the achieving mind. It creates a vicious cycle of success and failure. And so therefore, it reinforces the separate self. Right? We talked about competition. You know, we're always in competition with ourselves and with other people. You know, they say you can't solve a problem with the same mind that created it. Yeah. So you can't solve anything related to achievement with the achieving mind. In Buddhism, we want to let go of the separate self and merge with the oneness of things. And all we need to do this is to just sit and be awake and aware, being the breath, hearing the sounds, feeling the space in the room. Just being. Just being. Isn't that so restful? Being and allowing whatever bubbles up, whatever comes up, just allow it to be there. How else can we become wise? But by being aware of what's going on inside and outside of us, in the present moment, without any judgment. And as George said last week, when we let the thoughts just be, accepting them as they are, we are serene, right? Just like the poem says, we're serene in oneness. We're not fighting against anything. When we notice them, they release on their own and bring us back to emptiness. We don't have to do anything else. We really don't. As we relax into empty mind, we learn we can rely on its clarity. Not clouded like our mind of achievement. It's just clear, open sky. In times of struggle, we go back to the well that never dries up. It's our refuge, and it gives us a chance to look back at ourselves. And from that perspective, everything is clear. Everything is clear. And this is how we learn to become independent and to be able to take care of ourselves and to mature. This is also how we know the fact that we are Buddha nature. Remember, faith in this poem means fact, fact, fact mind. So we know that we are a big mind. If we want to free ourselves, we have to have faith or trust in empty mind. And students always ask, well, how do you have faith in that? Emptiness, what's there to have faith in? It's a leap of faith, really. You know, you jump in and nobody really can tell you how to do it. And nobody can tell you when you're ready to do it. Ultimately, you find out for yourself. And when you do, you realize you've always been the ocean. But the question is really not how to do it. The question is what and who. Who am I? Always go back to that question. Even when we're angry about something and we want to lose our anger, we ask, who am I? Am I just a small self with the anger? Or is there a part of me that's way beyond that? What is this emptiness that my thoughts float in? Am I really what the teachings say? What if I am? Who is it that leaps? Who is it that fears? And what do I have to lose? So I'm going to conclude with a quote from Merzel's commentary in the book, The Eye Never Sleeps. When you merge with the whole vast deep ocean, when you are no longer identified with the waves on the surface, there is nothing lacking. As long as you identify with the waves, your life is constantly going up and down. When you are one with the ocean, there are no longer any ups and downs. Everything deepens and evens out. Every day is a good day, no matter what happens. Every day is a perfect day. So, verses on the faith mind, part two. Does anybody have any comments or questions?
I had one comment.
Yes.
I find this to be an extraordinary poem. I'm really loving it. And I liked your explication, especially when you talked about the shallow end of Buddhism. And
the shallow end of the mind.
Yeah, that was really helpful in a certain way, because the shallow end and the deep end are connected, they're one flow, and they're not like two different ends of something. It's one pool.
Right.
I found that a really helpful image. I like that. Thank you.
We tend to think, especially when we first start learning about Buddhism and Zen, and we think, okay, there's this discriminating mind is over here, and it's separate from the Buddha nature that's over here. It's all one. You know, in Buddhist psychology, there are actually 9 levels of consciousness. You know, and we're on the lower. We're functioning on the lower ends, as opposed to the larger ends. But you can get into the larger ends. I mean, the highest level of consciousness is infinite consciousness. And when you think about your own consciousness, where does it end? Like the smoke and the incense, where does it end? And the thing is, you know, when I first started doing Buddhism, I didn't have faith in the empty mind, in the deeper end of Buddha nature. But I said to myself, well, I have to be open to this, because otherwise I'm not going to really get anywhere with this. So then I started to do little things. Like I'd say, so I was practice leader at that point, and you know how it is with practice. You never know who's going to come for service positions, who isn't. You have it all set up, and then the people don't come, and then you're running around. So then I would say, like, okay, well, something little like that. I would say, well, okay, something will come. Somebody will come. Something will happen. I still do it to this day. If I have a worriment, or if I have an issue going on, I don't know how to deal with it, or I don't know what to do, you know, I just do that. I just say, something will come. And you know what it is? When I say something will come, there's a letting go of the problem, really. There's just a letting go of the problem. So then I become clearer, and then something does come. You know, I don't know how it does. It just does. It's like in the movie Shakespeare in Love, right? I don't know. It's a mystery. Yeah. One big mind. Anybody else? I'm trying to see who's online tonight. My glasses are not serving me well.
Jamie made copies of the poem. If anyone needs them, they're on the table over here. Thank you, Jamie.
Okay. So did everybody hear that? Yeah. So if you don't have copies of the poem, you can get them online. And also, we have a table over here set up. Jackie, did you want to say something about that?
Yeah, this is our period of Ango, and we set up a table over in the corner for everybody. And please feel free to bring in anything that's really meaningful for you in this Ango period. If you'd like to leave something on the Ango table that's personal, that's lovely. I also put up sheets of paper and some pens if you'd like to set an intention for Ango, or maybe pick a line from Verses on the Faith Mind that you'd like to practice with. You can put it in the bowl and kind of leave it as an intention for this season.
So did you all hear what Jackie said? Virtual people? Yeah, you got it? Okay, good. All right, and you could do that at home too. You could write out an intention for yourself and put it on your own home altar. Or if you don't have an altar, you could just put it someplace, you know, where you pass by every day so that you could see it, and then it can help you to remind yourself of something. For me, the key lines in this are, when you try to stop activity to achieve passivity, your every effort fills you with activity, because that's what we tend to do. We make everything a project. But we don't want to make a spiritual practice a project. It's all about relaxing and letting go of all of that and finding out who you truly are, your deeper nature.
And for me too, like seeing, experiencing the stillness in activity and the activity in stillness.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Like even walking.
Right, exactly. And we've talked about that, finding the calm abiding in any activity that you do. You're bringing calmness to it. What really you're doing, you're bringing Buddha nature forward, because it's usually behind, you know, it's in the back of our minds, Buddha nature, the bigger part of ourselves. I'm dealing with the front, you know, what's in the front. But if we can, with, and that's what we're training you to do when you, when we do mindfulness activities like washing the dishes or I don't know, brushing your teeth or, you know, just really being in the moment with a very simple repetitive activity like walking. You know, we're training your mind to bring Buddha nature or your deeper self forward by letting everything settle, you know, so you're not always like this. So if you think even of the image of the clouds in the sky in your mind, if you think of the discriminating mind as the clouds, you know, and Buddha nature as the whole sky, you know, that's another image that can help you out too. Sometimes we do feel clouded, we don't feel clear about how we want to deal with the situation. You know, we have all these conflicting pieces going on, you know, and then, but when we just kind of push them away a little, not get rid of them at all, but just, you know, see that they're there, accept that they're there. And then when we do that, there's kind of a settling in, and there's a calmness that comes. You know, and then within that calmness, then you can see more clearly. You know, you might see, you could be mad at somebody because they did something to you, but in the clarity, you might see, oh, why did I say that to that person? You're mad at them because they got mad at you, but you don't realize what you said to them. But, you know, it could come up, you know, in your meditation. You know, how did that go? Oh, maybe that's what really ticked her off. Or what, I got really ticked off in that conversation. Okay. Clear mind. And then you feel something. And that's when you investigate. You know, you say, wow, what is this? What's it feel like? How does it feel? You know, and then, you know, things start bubbling. You know, you'll get images, you'll get thoughts of what it is, you know, and then you recognize it as part of your conditioning. And eventually you can let it go. Some things are really tight and they're really ingrained in you, and you're saying, "Wow, I can't let go of that." You can, over time, you can. You know, it's like the waves hitting the shore. After a while, the shore starts to change, right? Because of the work of the waves. And that's what we do, meditation. Thank you, everybody.